In 1969, a literary bombshell exploded onto America's cultural landscape. Sam Greenlee's The Spook Who Sat by the Door introduced readers to Dan Freeman, a black CIA operative who uses his government training to spark revolution in America's ghettos. The novel's premise was so incendiary that dozens of publishers rejected it before it found a home. When adapted to film in 1973, the FBI allegedly pressured theaters to pull it from screens, effectively erasing it from public consciousness for decades. Yet beneath its revolutionary narrative lies a sophisticated examination of code switching, institutional racism, and the psychological weight of being black in America. What makes this story so powerful isn't just its radical politics, but its unflinching portrayal of how systems designed to maintain power will reluctantly incorporate token diversity while ensuring fundamental power structures remain unchanged. Senator Gilbert Hennington faces a crisis after his support among black voters plummets following a conservative speech. His wife, Belinda, proposes an elegant solution: publicly challenge the CIA's discriminatory hiring practices, positioning him as an equality champion while attacking an easy target. During a Senate hearing, Hennington confronts CIA Director Phillips about minority representation. Phillips admits they have no black officers, claiming African Americans aren't ready for intelligence work. The gambit succeeds. Civil rights leaders praise Hennington, editorial celebrate him, and his polls rebound. Meanwhile, Carter Summerfield, the senator's Harvard-educated black assistant, observes with practiced detachment. He understands his contradictory role, visible enough to demonstrate Hennington's inclusiveness, yet invisible enough to never challenge the power structure. In discussions about the controversy, he offers only neutral observations, knowing his place in Washington's racial theater. This opening establishes the novel's central theme: how white institutions manipulate racial representation while preserving power imbalances. Hennington's manufactured confrontation shows how surface-level criticism of racism can actually strengthen existing hierarchies, setting the stage for Dan Freeman's entrance with his own hidden agenda. Dan Freeman arrives at his CIA interview deliberately underdressed to please the crackers. Unlike other black recruits eager to be firsts, Freeman feels no pride in the role. He has simply come to stay, revealing his determination to endure whatever necessary for his hidden purpose. At training, Freeman crafts a calculated ghetto persona with limited vocabulary and pronounced accent, knowing whites will see what they expect. As recruits are systematically eliminated, part of the CIA's plan to prove integration will fail, Freeman excels everywhere, particularly in marksmanship. When racist instructor Calhoun challenges Freeman to a judo match, expecting humiliation, Freeman defeats him decisively, dislocating his shoulder. Freeman realizes his mask has holes and he must be more careful. The director notes Freeman's ability to fade into backgrounds. People forget his face minutes after meeting him. Despite exceptional skills, officials dismiss him as slow-witted. Freeman's performance is psychological warfare. He confirms racial stereotypes while showing just enough competence to advance, intelligent enough to complete training but unthreatening to white superiors, while gathering skills for his true mission. Freeman works as the CIA's token black employee from a windowless basement office. After impressing Senator Hennington, he's appointed special assistant to the director, essentially to be visible proof the CIA was integrated. This position grants him access to high-level briefings and meetings. While maintaining his cover and secretly practicing combat skills, Freeman balances two romantic relationships: Joy, his college girlfriend who wants him to pursue law or politics, and the Dahomey Queen. His relationship with Joy deteriorates when he discovers her seeing a light-skinned medical student from a prominent Detroit family. As the general's assistant, Freeman excels at making simple tasks appear complex while executing them perfectly. He travels internationally with the general, including 4 trips to Saigon. Though he enjoys the job's privileges, a lunch reveals the limits of his acceptance when the general praises him as a credit to your race while expressing patronizing views about black intellectual capacity. Watching news footage of police violence against civil rights protesters, Freeman resolves to act and writes to Chicago social welfare agencies about job openings, advancing his plan. Freeman leaves the CIA with dignity, carrying only an attaché case. His cultivated appearance, ill-fitting clothes, gold-rimmed tooth, and shuffling gait made him likable yet underestimated. At the White House, the president repeatedly calls him foreman. When given a pocket knife, the standard Boy Scout gift, Freeman counters with his PT boat tie clasp, creating awkwardness. Later, Freeman confronts a hostile chauffeur who flicks a cigarette at him. "Nigger, if you had hit me with that butt, it would have been your black ass," he says, abandoning his submissive persona. At the airport bar, he reflects, he had conned them all, and in his own way, had been the best of the spooks, and they might never know it. In Chicago, Freeman joins the Southside Youth Foundation and reconnects with the Cobras gang, revealing his past as their warlord Turk. After proving his fighting skills, he offers, "You really want to fuck with Whitey? I'll show you how." Freeman trains the Cobras militarily while teaching them about their African heritage, creating a cover that they're heroin addicts to avoid police scrutiny while actually training as revolutionaries. The uprising ignites when police kill a 15-year-old boy beneath the L tracks. Against orders, police dogs arrive, inflaming the crowd. Though the dogs retreat, rumors of one biting a 3-year-old girl trigger riots across Chicago's South Side. Freeman's freedom fighters launch bold actions, bombing the mayor's office, painting a Negro alderman's car, sabotaging National Guard vehicles, and jamming radio frequencies. In one operation, they kidnap Colonel Bull Evans, dose him with LSD, and leave him in Washington Park Fountain wearing blackface. The National Guard responds violently, roaming streets and firing indiscriminately. Freeman deploys rotating sniper teams. That night, Studd and Freeman execute a perfect mission, killing a machine gunner with synchronized shots before vanishing. Freeman has established underground units in 12 major cities, sending gang members to create new identities and recruit locally. 9 units are now combat ready, with coordinated rebellions spreading to Oakland, Los Angeles, Harlem, and South Philadelphia. On a cool autumn evening, Freeman confronts his friend Dawson, now a police sergeant. Freeman urges him to join the Freedom Fighters, but Dawson refuses and calls Freeman hypocritical for using the Cobras. Their confrontation turns violent. Dawson wounds Freeman, but Freeman kills his former friend with a precise neck strike learned during CIA training. With his cover blown, Freeman orders lieutenants to remove Dawson's body and initiates Condition Red, activating all attack teams nationwide. As they depart, he watches with mixed emotions, recognizing they've become leaders who no longer need his guidance. Wounded and drinking alone, Freeman listens to combat erupting across the city while Billie Holiday plays. The nation faces unprecedented chaos as the black resistance proves unstoppable. Freeman's transformation from CIA infiltrator to revolutionary leader stands as both a warning about systemic racism and a testament to the human spirit's pursuit of freedom, regardless of personal cost.